Estaba kunjabiyari Jaya Radha Madhava kunjabiyari Janavalava Girivada Dari Jaya Gopi Janavalava Girivada Dari Gopi Janavalava Girivada Dari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Madhava Kunjabihari
Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Ashtotara Sata Shri Shri Mahadi Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Samaveta Bhaktivrinda Ki Nitai Gaura Premanandi, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. from Guntara, Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 19, Text 11. That's very long Sanskrit, but it is a prayer, so I'll just read once. Om Namo Bhagavate Upashrama Shilayo Paratanatmaya Namo Kinchana Vitaya Rishi Ribhaya Nara Naranaya Paramahamsa Paramagurave Atmarama Dipataye Namo Nama Iti. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Nara Narayan, the best of all saintly persons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the most self-controlled and self-realized. He is free from false prestige, and he is the asset of persons who have no material possessions. He is the spiritual master of all Paramahamsas, who are the most exalted human beings, and he is the master of the self-realized. Let me offer my repeated obeisances at his lotus feet. Text 12. Narada, the most powerful saintly sage, also worships Naranarayan by chanting the following mantra. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the master of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this visible cosmic manifestation, yet he is completely free from false prestige. Although to the foolish he appears to have accepted a material body like us, he is unaffected by bodily tribulations like hunger, thirst, and fatigue. Although he is the witness who sees everything, his senses are unpolluted by the objects he sees. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that unattached, pure witness of the world, the Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is described as Satchit Ananda Vigraha, the body of eternity, transcendental bliss, and full knowledge. Now in this verse he is more fully described. Krishna is the creator of the entire cosmic manifestation, yet he is unattached to it. If we were to construct a very tall skyscraper, we would be very attached to it. But Krishna is so renounced that although he has created everything, he is not attached to anything. Furthermore, although Krishna has his transcendental form, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, he is not disturbed by the bodily necessities of life, which are called daihika. For example, he is never hungry, thirsty, or fatigued. Nahanyate dehagato pi daihikai. Then again, since everything is Krishna's property, he sees everything and is present everywhere. But because his body is transcendental, he is above vision, the objects of vision, and the process of vision. When we see someone beautiful, we are attracted. The sight of a beautiful woman immediately attracts a man. And the sight of a man naturally attracts a woman. Krishna, however, is transcendental to all these faults. Although he is the seer of everything, he is not afflicted with faulty vision. Nadrigyasya gunar vidushyate. Therefore, although he is the witness and seer, he is aloof from all affection for the activities he sees. He is always unattached and separate. He is only a witness. Om Jnanam Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshuru Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanan Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is the prayer by Narada Muni, who's here offering to Nara Narayan Rishi. We were hearing yesterday from Daita Prabhu's class, the great sage Nara Narayan, who's residing in Bhadrak Rashtram. And a beautiful prayer is being offered describing some of the features of the Supreme Lord and specific reasons for glorification. In particular, Nara Narayan Rishi, we understand, is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nara and Narayan, Nara being the portion and Narayan being the plenary expansion. And even today it's explained that Nara Narayan is living in the Himalayas. So we were just commenting earlier that we have an understanding that Krishna came to this planet and he left, and Mahaprabhu came and Lord Ram came, but actually there's still an incarnation of Godhead living on this planet right now. So how auspicious that is, just his existence. And here we're hearing some of his qualities, actually, that he is the most self-controlled and self-realized. He is free from false prestige. He is the asset of persons who have no material possessions. So maybe we'll just go through a few of these descriptions. Particularly, this is explaining the qualities that the devotees are striving to develop. And great rishis take shelter of Nayan Rishi as he is setting the example by being the perfect sage, by being self-controlled. This is, of course, the first instruction Rupa Goswami is giving us. Before any tangible steps towards self-realization can occur, there has to be self-control, the senses, the mind, etc. He is free from false prestige. We'll also discuss this a little bit. A very important qualification to developing higher levels of spiritual realization. He is the asset of persons who have no material possessions. This is described as akinchana vitaya. We know that we hear this quality a lot, akinchana Krishna. It refers to one who has no other shelter, no other possession than Krishna, one who's given up all material attachments or material possessions to just take shelter of Krishna. Now, of course, we know from studying Isha Upanishad that it's not that actually someone has to be possessionless. It's not that you have to just walk around, I don't know, without any possessions. But the idea is actually understanding everything belongs to Krishna. So understanding that I don't have any possessions in the sense that everything is Krishna's property, and then properly utilizing his energy as far as whatever we need for our devotional service. He is the spiritual master of all Paramahamsas, who are the most exalted human beings, and he is the master of the self-realized. Let me offer my repeated obeisances at his lotus feet. In the next text, he continues, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the master of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this visible cosmic manifestation, yet he is completely free from false prestige. So here we're actually hearing the nature of Krishna's supreme power and his simultaneous humility. It's a little bit of a contradiction. Prabhupada mentions in the purport that if a man creates a skyscraper, he's so much proud of that one building. But what to speak of God, who's actually the source of everything, and who possesses all opulences, fame, knowledge, beauty, power, and renunciation, yet he remains humble. So that's indeed inconceivable. And as far as how the material creation is enacted, we know that Krishna, he's always enjoying in Vrindavan, yet through his different expansions, actually, he's manifesting this entire material creation. Through Balaram and Sankarshan, ultimately he expands as Mahavishnu to lie down in the causal ocean in the Viraj River, where countless universes are emanating from the pores of his skin. And those universes then amalgamate with the material elements of the Mahatattva, and Garbhodakshay Vishnu then enters into each universe and lies down in the Garbhodak ocean. And
From there, Kshira Dakshai Vishnu also manifests into each and every atom of creation. So Prabhupada explains that actually there's nothing but Krishna. Krishna himself has become everything. And yet at the same time here we're hearing that Krishna is humble. So how is that possible? It's difficult for us to conceive, but these are actually the transcendental qualities of Krishna. That in spite of having everything and being the most beautiful, the most powerful, etc., the Lord is perfect. It's explained that he's perfect and complete. So he's perfect in all the divine qualities. And naturally, any humility that the jivas can experience are possible because they're available in Krishna. Krishna is the source of all the divine qualities. He's fully ornamented and the source of humility. So this is difficult for us to comprehend. Although to the foolish he appears to have accepted a material body like us, he is unaffected by bodily tribulations like hunger, thirst, and fatigue. Although he is the witness who sees everything, his senses are unpolluted by the objects he sees. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that unattached, pure witness of the world, the Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead. So we'll try to just dive into a few of these qualities also from the purport also. But I forgot to ask the blessings of our senior devotees here, so please bless us that we can enter into some of what's being described here. So specifically, in Isha Upanishad, I was just appreciating this point of how actually we can come to understand the nature of Krishna. It's explained, we were having a nice discussion actually with Curtis also, that how the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality, can be have a form if he's unlimited. How is that possible? How can something be unlimited and have a form? We can just see around us, you know, what our vision can perceive. It doesn't seem like there's one gigantic form. We see separate manifestations. So how can we come to the understanding that's being described here of Krishna's transcendental body, not affected by material considerations? So it's explained in Mantra 5 that in the Brahma Samhita, it is said that Govinda, the primeval Lord, enters everything by his plenary portion. He enters the universe as well as all the atoms of the universe. He is outside in his Virat form, and he is within everything as Antaryami. As Antaryami, he witnesses everything that is going on, and he awards us the results of our actions. We ourselves may forget what we have done in previous lives, but because the Lord witnesses our actions, the results of our actions are always there, and we have to undergo the reactions nonetheless. So this is actually explaining how, even though we may not be able to perceive the form of God, he's actually the source, the direct, everything that we see is actually his energy, and he's entered in through each atom by his expansion. So how closely related, how close Krishna is to us at every moment, yet we can't see him. That's the great misfortune. So then we'll describe, why is it that we cannot see him? Why is it that even though he's present everywhere, everything is his energy, he's the source of everything and our best friend, but still we can't see him? So it's mentioned here that Narayan Rishi is free from pride. And so this pride is considered a disqualification, actually, to perceiving God. And that arises from illusion. And simultaneous with illusion comes what we understand as this duality, the world of duality. So that was one point I kind of wanted to focus on, that he is unaffected by bodily tribulations like hunger, thirst, and fatigue. Although he is the witness who sees everything, his senses are unpolluted by the objects he sees. Yes, he sees everything and is present everywhere, but because his body is transcendental, he is above vision, the objects of vision, and the process of vision. So here it's describing actually his the term given is apapavidham, that sin cannot touch Krishna. Even though he's aware of everything, he's never affected by that. But when we, I mean, anytime we see something very disturbing, it sits with us. Or if we're in some uncomfortable circumstance, we're not aloof from that. Rather, we get very much entangled in that situation. So this is another difference. But this is one of the points I was really appreciating. When we see someone beautiful, we are attracted. The sight of a beautiful woman immediately attracts a man, and the sight of a man naturally attracts a woman. Krishna, however, is transcendental to all these faults. So generally it's considered that this is just natural, that a man sees a woman, they become attracted. That's natural. There's things that we like, things we don't like. But saying that actually Krishna is transcendental to all these faults, in other words, even this very simple attraction is a fault for the soul. It's a degradation, actually. Because the natural position of the soul is to be full in his loving relationship with Krishna. Therefore, becoming attracted or repelled by anything in this world is described here as a fault. So this world of duality is really the cause of our inability to perceive Krishna, who is so close to all of us. In the seventh chapter, Krishna explains a lot about this principle. In these very nice verses, icha dvesha smutena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani samoham sarga yanti parantapa. O sign of Bharata, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. So we may have heard this verse before, but it's really giving us a very powerful insight as to what is the barrier between our perception of Krishna. And it's this attraction and aversion. That in this material atmosphere, we're attracted to things that provide a sense gratification and we're averse to those that don't. So we'll hear in the purport. The real constitutional position of the living entity is that of subordination to the Supreme Lord, who is pure knowledge. When one is deluded into separation from this pure knowledge, he becomes controlled by the illusory energy and cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illusory energy is manifested in the duality of desire and hate. Due to desire and hate, the ignorant person wants to become one with the Supreme Lord and envies Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, this is the root of that principle of duality, is that actually the soul is envious of Krishna. So therefore, anything that I'm trying to imitate Krishna, I want to be the enjoyer. Anything that stands in my way, I become averse to. And anything that is helping me enjoy, I become attracted to that. So this principle is operative in so many different ways. We can see the whole society is simply going, people are simply living their life based on what I like, what I don't like. And the root of it all in the material situation is this enviousness of Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Pure devotees who are not deluded or contaminated by desire and hate can understand the Lord Sri Krishna appears by his internal potencies. But those who are deluded by duality and nescience think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is created by material energies. So simply based on this principle, desire and hatred, they're becoming so deluded, it's impossible for them to understand Krishna. Such deluded persons symptomatically dwell in dualities of dishonor and honor, misery and happiness, woman and man, good and bad, pleasure and pain, etc., thinking, this is my wife, this is my house, I am the master of this house, I am the husband of this wife. These are the dualities of delusion. Those who are so deluded by dualities are completely foolish and therefore cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the situation that despite Krishna's presence in so many of his different features to accompany the living entity to be the witness, the sense gratificatory propensities of our conditioned mind are preventing us from being able to perceive that. And so actually, the only way to get free from that is explained in the next verse. Yesham tamikatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandvamoha nirmukta bhajate mam dridhavrataha. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. I'll just read a little from the purport. Those eligible for elevation to the transcendental position are mentioned in this verse. For those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, it is very difficult to transcend the duality of desire and hate. Only those who have passed their lives in practicing the regulative principles of religion, who have acted piously, and who have conquered sinful reactions can accept devotional service and gradually rise to the pure knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then gradually they can meditate in trance on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the process of being situated on the spiritual platform. This elevation is possible in Krishna consciousness in the association of pure devotees, for in the association of great devotees one can be delivered from delusion. So the operative principle here is then association. By then hearing from those who are free from these dualities, actually, one begins to understand actually that they're not the material body. They're not simply subject to the, you know, oscillating ups and downs of the material world. That as a soul, they're forever distinct from the material body, the material mind. That these are actually superfluous to our being. And with knowledge, then actually one is able to become aloof from those pushings and pullings of attachment and aversion. And it's explained here, how does this state develop actually? By engaging in devotional service with determination. That only by actually unbreakable, Prabhupada mentions, unbreakable devotion is the force or the engine that will allow us to transcend dualities. Because our consciousness becomes then simply fixed on what is pleasing and what's not pleasing to Krishna. If that's our primary meditation, then what the material circumstances around us, they don't affect us. Rather, we can be fixed in Krishna's pleasure. And that's the spiritual, the proper attachment aversion, what's pleasing to Krishna and what is displeasing to Krishna. So this is a very critical principle. We know also later in the 13th chapter, Krishna explains the nature of the field and the knower of the field. So similarly, this knowledge is meant to bring us out of this attachment and aversion principle, because that's simply operating on the principle of ignorance. Prabhupada mentions honor, dishonor. These are the type of dualities that are plaguing our spiritual life. We're always concerned about these things. This will be good for me, this will be bad. I'll get some respect in this position, I may be disrespected. So when we are experiencing these type of psychic contemplations, Krishna is just witnessing that, and he's seeing that we're so much moved by sense gratification. We're not actually interested in his service. Rather, we're interested in maintaining our prestige or our position or looking good for others or what's palatable to our senses. So all these things are pushing Krishna and our opportunity to associate with him in love further and further away. So only by really coming to the proper knowledge, the understanding that we're not the body, that honor and dishonor, why should that matter? That's only given to the body. Why should good and bad, pleasant, unpleasant, these are simply catering to the body, which I'm not. So this is, if we want to actually take up or aspire for devotion, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, na shochati na kanchati, neither hankering nor lamenting, samasarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate pradam, that's how we come to the real position of devotional service, is by getting free from these dualities. And especially in our relationships, dualities, the mind is, in a material conditioned state, it becomes very easily agitated. If one small thing goes wrong, the mind will just blow up. And then any, even devotees, those who are meant to be worshipped, and our dearmost friends and saviors actually, become objects of our anger or hatred even. So if we just let the mind carry on with its material ways without checking it, then the progress will become very difficult. We become offensive. We know that the jivas are nothing but part and parcels of Krishna. They're his own energy. So unless we're able to check the mind, then we become offensive towards other living entities. Krishna will forever remain obscured from our vision, because that's offensive to Krishna. To be, I was reading in the Mahabharata that if one is harmful to another living entity, that's being harmful to Vishnu, because they're just as parts and parcels. But as long as we're trapped in this, you know, the materialistic ideas of gain and loss and happiness, defeat, honor, dishonor, then that's always going to be there. So on the converse, this 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is explaining actually the difference between the field and the knower of the field by giving us information of what comprises the field, these different elements, mind, intelligence, desire, hatred, even convictions. And beyond that is the soul, which is different. Chetra, chetra, gyor, gyanam, yatta, gyanam, matamama. Krishna says real knowledge, that's to know the field of activities and the knower of field. That's what I consider true knowledge. In the material world, now everyone's trying to come to knowledge, universities, college, period. This is not knowledge, according to Krishna, because it's still on the platform of misidentification with the body, the world of duality. Real knowledge is understanding that distinction, and then sequentially, the process is given of how one becomes free from that. In the text 8 through 12, this beautiful list of qualities, that real knowledge is qualities, actually. How to get out of this situation of ignorance. It begins humility, pridelessness. This is what Narayan Rishi is being glorified, that even though he has so many qualifications, he's humble and prideless. Nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control. I'm just going to read them because it's very purifying. It's just by hearing these qualities. Renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. So this formula, and of course the purport, Prabhupada takes each one kind of step by step and explains how this is liberating the soul from its entanglement, its identification with the field, the material elements. And so I just want to conclude with this point that's mentioned in particular to what we were reading about. Yes. One can never restrict the coming and going of happiness and distress, so one should be detached from the materialistic way of life and be automatically equipoised in both cases. Generally, when we get something desirable, we are very happy, and when we get something undesirable, we are distressed. But if we are actually in the spiritual position, these things will not agitate us. To reach that stage, we have to practice unbreakable devotional service. Devotional service to Krishna without deviation means engaging oneself in the 9 processes of devotional service, chanting, hearing, worshipping, offering respect, etc., as described in the last verse of the 9th chapter. That process should be followed. So the nice term given here is unbreakable devotional service. Mamchayo vyabhicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. That unflinching devotional service in all circumstances actually has the power to lift us out of the modes of nature, out of this principle of raga and dvesha, and situate us actually beyond duality. So that's what's being encouraged here by engaging in these 9 different processes, of which our whole day basically is generally in the temple or in the ashram composed of chanting, hearing, worshiping the deity, serving the Lord's lotus feet. All of these processes we're doing, but the missing element must be that we're not doing them undeviatingly or in an unbreakable manner. So we know devotional service must be ahoitukiya pratiyata, uninterrupted and unmotivated. So we may be doing these activities, but there's breaks. There's times from our service where, for whatever reason, generally most likely due to this duality, again, in our mind, some mental block is there and we're unable to. But if we can engage in all the same activities we're doing, but just in an unbroken, undeviating manner, Krishna is explaining this is the formula to come out of this very, very abominable situation, a materialistic conception of life, of material contamination. And that is part of what the great sage Narayan Rishi is being glorified here, that he is free from duality. He's never moved by the temporary dualities of this world. He's free from pride, free from illusion, and he's the witness. He's unaffected by things that are going on as the super soul also. That's also comes, Krishna explains a lot in that same chapter about his nature as the super soul. So again, Krishna is, he's our most intimate, most closest friend, but the world of duality, of material concept of life is checking that realization for us. But by very carefully studying how the soul is embodied and the means to come out of that is very simply unbreakable devotional service. So those were just a few thoughts, and I thank you all for bearing with us. If there's any questions or comments, it's a little early. But I could just comment. On the example of book distribution, actually the idea that Prabhupada encouraged and that we experience is that we try to get out. That's one of the benefits of that service, is that we actually get out of the nature of material discrimination and trying to see this or that, but rather by approaching everyone, it helps fix us in the conception that, you know, that we're not our bodies and they're not their bodies. Everyone has an equal opportunity. Everyone is encouraged to receive transcendental knowledge. So in that example, it's helpful to try to apply this principle in that service. If you're going shopping, at the same time, we can be intelligent. It's not a fall down to try to intelligently understand how one can distribute the most books. If by going to a concert, that there's a much more higher likelihood of many books going out versus visiting the retirement home, then that's okay. But we still keep a conception that the soul has nothing to do with this body. Due to the modes of nature, some embodied souls may be more likely to take books. It's okay to have that understanding, but generally we should not try to discriminate. This person is qualified, this person is puffed up, this person is those things. That's the reason that we're in the material world, is by falsely identifying with the body. And now in the case of bogus shopping, you have to find the vegetable bodies that are suitable to offer to Krishna. So some discrimination is required, and you know, that's also not necessarily being so much influenced by the world of duality, but rather critically understanding what's pleasing to Krishna. And you know, fortunate are those vegetables that are selected. But so that's just a comment, but I don't, if your question is more precise, maybe I could try, or Nityananda Prabhu could please. Thank you. Yeah, that's important clarification. Okay, Terence. Karuna Nidhi can make. It's not due to the nature. We have certain talents or talents. All these things are actually qualities that are given by Krishna. So Prabhupada would emphasize that Krishna consciousness means you just doing what you do for Krishna. We utilize whatever skills or qualities we have for the satisfaction of the Lord, because we all have individual gifts. Everyone has certain propensities. And so Krishna consciousness means to use that in the service of the Lord. Actually, Krishna becomes very pleased when naturally we have some quality that we use it in his service. It's fulfilling for us, and Krishna is worshipped in many different ways. There may also, of course, be times where we have to surrender our nature and do something maybe we don't like to do. But you can see just in the history of our movement that Prabhupada would engage people in so many different ways, and never would he say that this service is less than that service. The emphasis was always that devotional service is absolute. You can't materially compare it. It's on the absolute platform. So any service that we're doing for Krishna, the main ingredient is love that Krishna is looking for. So any service that we're doing, that is can be our means to perfection. We see many, many devotees became so expert on the altar, deity worship. Prabhupada would be extremely pleased. Devotees that were taking care of Tulsi, devotees that were just working very hard, maybe, you know, Jayananda Prabhu with the Ratha Yatra cart. Other devotees would be managerial positions. Other devotees would be book distributors. Other devotees would be traveling. Prabhupada very much valued and appreciated and understood the necessity for all these different types of service and different propensities that individuals have, and would encourage them in that way. So most definitely, any service that we're doing, we can be sure that this is, if done to our most earnest endeavor with love, then that's very pleasing to Krishna. And we'll get sufficient realization. We'll get the same realizations, ultimately, if we're taking our service very seriously. And someone who's, you know, a traveling sannyasi, and someone who's just been very steadily cleaning the temple, doing the pots for years, you'll meet people like that, where they have realization. They have a very different service, but it's devotional service, so they're getting the same understandings that you may hear, you know, from one person very eloquently explained, or from a more simple person just very simply explained. Thank you. If there's anything you'd like to comment, please. Okay, thank you. Karuna Nidhi Prabhu. Yeah, that's a very nice point, that's actually how to get out of this duality, is to see how everything is actually Krishna's energy, and therefore should be used in his service. So materially, one may see an attractive, you know, member of the opposite sex, and materially, but if we understand actually everything is Krishna's energy, it's meant for his pleasure, then immediately, you know, the thoughts of my own sense gratification are not there, because we've understood. So that's a very nice example. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Prabhuji, yeah. Hare. I wish I could explain better than I can. I plenary, maybe you can take this one, that the Lord's manifest. Is that okay? Yeah, it's very important to understand how the Lord is expanding. Maybe we can just go over. There's Krishna, the original form of God, who expands himself first as Balaram. Balaram expands as Sankarshan. Sankarshan then has four expansions, Anirudh, Pradyumna, Vasudev, and another Sankarshan. From Balaram come those four. And then from those four, each another four come, I believe. And then ultimately, when Mahavishnu manifests from that second quadruple expansion, from Narayan. Okay. And then from him, or another expansion of Vishnu comes, Garbhadaksha Vishnu enters into each universe. We said the universes are coming from the pores of Mahavishnu's skin. Garbhadaksha enters into each universe. He's considered the life of that universe. And then Shiradakshai Vishnu expands himself as another plenary portion within every atom. And also in the milk ocean in Sveta Deep. So this is important to see how Krishna is so present in the material world, even though we're unable to see him as we were explaining, but all these different expansions, you know, we have to understand how God is manifest. Then we perceive him in the heart of every living being. Then, you know, how can you disrespect someone if you know that they are the resting place of God? In one sense, yes, there's different types of expansions of Krishna. Svamsha and Vibhinamsha. So the Svamsha expansions are these in the Vishnu category. The Vibhinamsha is the Jiva category. The Jivas are just an expansion of Krishna ultimately, yes. The Jiva Tattva. pretty far out. People have no idea. If you, you know, people walking around, they have no idea of any of this knowledge. So we're so fortunate that, you know, otherwise you can't just come up with this just by seeing. It's not that you can go to the park and, you know, sit down and contemplate, oh yeah, okay, Mahavishnu expands, okay, Kshira Daksha is in the heart. No, you can't find this knowledge. It's beyond the realm of mental speculation. We just receive such a fortune. And this is how we can get out of the, we have to put, like, glasses are such a nice example. Before we don't have it, now we have glasses so we can see, so we're meant to see the world and everything around us in light of this knowledge. Thank you. Anything else? Yes, Master, please.
That's why what? But before that, you said that's why. I didn't hear the last statement. That happened.
Yes, thank you. Did you mention that Lord Chaitanya does not manifest the same potency of? Yeah, I've heard also that he kills the demons within, the enemies within. Yeah, because he's Krishna himself. His anger was exhibited because someone offended his pure devotee. So the Lord can never tolerate his pure devotee being blasphemed or attacked. So he became very angry. And Lord Nityananda, he checked him. He said, "You hold on, you know, as Lord Chaitanya, you have a different program. You have to deliver them. You know, how will they understand that you're the most merciful? You have to deliver them." So, being obliged to Lord Nityananda, he then gave them pure love of God. Okay, it's 8:30. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Vrindavan.